Stop. Stop. Will you? Stop, Dave. Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
Okay, here we are. It's Saturday night. We're going to talk a little bit more about state sovereignty tonight. And I think Kevin will be along soon. We're going to talk later with Mike Moon. Mike is a representative in the Missouri State House of Representatives up there in Jefferson City. He also represented the state of Missouri at the Convention of the States meeting that was held at Mount Vernon, not the Mount Vernon in Missouri, the Mount Vernon where George Washington lived. And they had a meeting there, and they discussed, made the initial discussions of the Convention of the States. I haven't talked to Mike myself since then, so I'm looking forward to having a chat with him. Mike is fairly well known in this southwest part of the state now. He ran against Billy Long in a Republican primary for United States House of Representatives, and I was heartbroken when he lost myself. I'm sure a lot of true principled constitutionalists were. Billy's not the kind of thing that we like to brag about on our side of the aisle. And he's quite frequently appears on the local morning talk show around here and is a frequent guest on Matt Canobie's gun show on Saturday mornings. Mike's a personable guy, and I think you'll really want to stay tuned for sure and get in on the discussion with Mike Moon. So we talked about state sovereignty. Some discussion came up today about whether or not Missouri would be able to work on the licensure issue. Very interesting discussion I was involved in today about licensing and the need for it. At all, for that matter, licensing doctors, barbers, dentists, hairstylists, pastors, psychologists, counselors. I'm of the opinion, of course, as a libertarian, that we don't need to license any of these people, you know. I tell people sometimes that I'm an astrophysicist, and nobody's ever asked me to see a license that says I am. I just, they just say, what school said so? And that's all I want to know from my doctor. What school said you were a doctor? And what's your track record? What's your employment history in that business? And then I know whether or not I want to let you cut out my gallbladder. Some other things that are coming up in the Missouri State House of Representatives we'll be talking about along the lines of state sovereignty. There's a new Second Amendment Protection Act being batted around up there. But mostly troubling this session. Again, this ugly right to work has raised its nasty little head. And it continues to amaze me that people who claim that they believe in liberty are jumping on this bandwagon once more. this thing could so easily be fixed. You know, unions are not good things the way they exist today. That's granted. The way the law protects unions is not a good thing. That's granted. We all agree with that. The way the Federal Labor Relations Act allows unions to virtually take over a person's business is inherently evil. We're all in agreement on that. Why would we then abuse another individual's liberty and property rights to undo that wrong when it is so easy to undo it the right way? You know, I during a discussion on this that I was having with someone yesterday, I coined a phrase that gets away from this whole right to work thing. First of all, you don't have a right to work. Working, as it's used in this connotation, is a privilege that is given to you by the person who is spending money for your labor. It is not a right. You don't have a right to someone else's money. You have that person may extend you the privilege of earning the money by working for them. And when they do, it's going to be under their conditions. When they tell you to work, doing what they tell you to do, now you don't have to work for them. You don't have to accept that privilege. But it is a privilege nonetheless. You have no right to work. You certainly have no right to work where you dictate and under the terms that you dictate. You have the right to work where an employer is willing to hire you, where an employer is willing to pay you, where someone with money is willing to part with their money for your labor. So I would much rather see a right to employ. That is, I have the right as an employer, or any employer has the right to employ you without regard to your union affiliation. Now, what this would do is it would completely free every employer, regardless of whether there's a union representing some or all of their workers, to hire anyone without requiring them to be in the union, or regardless of the union status of any of their other employees, to hire someone with respect to whether or not they're in a union. That would leave everyone's rights alone and achieve the same purpose. What's wrong with, how easy would that be? I do want to say this, though. I'm going to fight hard against right to work as it is written currently in the bill that is going to be posed to the Missouri legislature, because it is wrong. It is inherently evil. It is insidiously robbing people of their property rights and individual liberties. But in line with what we're discussing here in this series, it is the power of the sovereign state of Missouri to do that silliness if they so desire. That is the deal about state sovereignty. It was never within the power of the federal government constitutionally to tell me that I have to or can't accept a labor union, to tell me that a labor union can or cannot do something. That's what state sovereignty is all about. That's what last night's show was all about. And if you missed it, you missed a great show with Lloyd Sloan. We talked about what I think is one of the more important amendments that has to come out of the Convention of the States, and that is the State Repeal Amendment. Abortion, how do you feel about abortion? It's within the power of the state of Missouri to make a law one way or the other about that. You fight for which side you want that law to be on. And when it comes down on the wrong side for you, you fight to change it. But you fight that fight in the state of Missouri. You don't fight that fight in Washington, D.C. You have the power to change something in the state of Missouri that you don't like. If you haven't figured it out yet, you no longer have that power in Washington, D.C. I get a kick out of some lieutenant colonel who's trying to get a million-person march on Washington, D.C., and they'll occupy Washington, D.C. until 8 or 9 people lose their jobs. I think they were going to occupy Washington, D.C. until Boehner loses his position and McConnell loses his position and Harry Reid loses his position and Eric Holder loses his position or some such crud. They don't care up there in Washington, D.C. They don't care if 5 million people march up there. I mean, they've shown that over and over and over again. They have shown you that they don't care what you want or what you think. We're going to talk with Mike here in a while about the one thing that states can do to take their sovereignty back, and that is Article 5 of the United States Constitution. Article 5 of the United States Constitution says that should Washington become so corrupt, I mean, it was written 250 years ago for today. It was written to allow the states to get together and change the Constitution. And it's time for that change. It is time to quit cowering. It is time to quit being afraid. It is time to quit propagandizing about runaway conventions and silly claptrap stuff that doesn't matter. And grab the sword of the United States Constitution and march on Washington, D.C. and make some change. And that change needs to be a return of the government of the United States of America to the people and to the states, or to the states and to the people, as the Constitution says, respectively. The first thing that needs to come out of this, and as our friend Lloyd pointed out to us last night, and I've mentioned several times before, we don't just get together in a meeting as though it were a tea party and have everyone throw out ideas. We meet with a specific agenda and with specific amendments when we go to this meeting that we want to do. And the first and most important one has to be a repeal of the 17th Amendment. Is everyone aware of what the 17th Amendment was? The 17th Amendment took the power of the Senate away from the states and gave it to lobbyists, basically, is what it did. Gave it to big money. See, when the Constitution was first written, if you don't remember, and nobody alive remembers it being this way, but you may have remembered from your history classes, if you're old enough that they really taught American history when you were in school, the senators, 2 from each state, were selected by the legislatures of the state. They weren't elected by the people. We have our house, the House of Representatives. It represents us, the people down in the street. You know, the people corporately are represented in the House of Representatives. We all get to vote on our member of the House of Representatives. And so the states, in an effort to make sure that the individual states had their interest protected in Washington, D.C., they each selected two senators from their state legislature. And that's how senators were selected for the Senate. Well, that was a little bit too hard on the socialists, a little bit too hard on the progressives of the late 1800s and early 1900s, who wanted to be able to ramrod through this massive explosion of federal government without having to worry about the interest of the piddly little states. See, because if two senators from each state were there to represent the interest of the state of Missouri, there would be no Obamacare. There would be no EPA, because the EPA and Obamacare are done at the expense of the states. All of this explosive expansion of Medicaid, all of this crazy state exchange thing, all of this stuff that is costing states hundreds of millions and billions of dollars, that would have never happened. See, one house can't make a law, but one house can stop bad law. So we've got to get this 17th Amendment repealed, and then we have got to initiate some kind of a state repeal amendment, something along the lines, and I like exactly what Lloyd Sloan talked about last night. If you didn't hear last night's show, go back and catch it. It's a doozy. But something that says that a combination of states, and Lloyd's idea is a majority of the states, or more than half, representing a majority of the population. So 26 states that also represent more than half of the population could repeal, by a vote of their combined state legislatures, any federal law or regulation. Oh my goodness. Talk about returning the power to the states. I mean, any law like Obamacare that managed to make it through wouldn't last 10 days. I mean, even if some law passed that was so massive that we had to pass it to know what was in it, as soon as we knew what was in it, it wouldn't survive. And then the third amendment that must come out of the Convention of the States is a repeal of the 16th Amendment, the income tax, and an implementation of the fair tax. Those are the three amendments that have to come out of a convention of the states. Those are the three amendments that would return, just those three in and of themselves, would return sovereignty to the states and make the federal government exactly what it was intended to be, a servant of the states. Put the federal government back in its box where it belongs and make the federal government what it's supposed to be. Now, the problem that people who run around and holler about state sovereignty has is most of them aren't ready for it. Most people who scream about state sovereignty and scream about making their state the power, scream about how the federal government should be subservient to the states, they just don't really get it. Most of them are not ready for either the cost or the power of state sovereignty. And we're going to cover that when we get back.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for grass fire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
Difficulty there while we were gone, but we managed to get it straightened out. Okay, so we come up to this point where we have large groups of people out screaming about state sovereignty and not really having a grasp of what it means, who aren't really ready. But let's talk about the cost first. If we do away with the EPA, if we do away with the Federal Department of Education, as should be done, if we do away with lots and lots and lots of federal agencies, which should be done, are we prepared to live with the cost of what it will be if our state takes on these efforts? Do you imagine, for the sake of argument, that if we do away with the Federal Department of Education, as we should, that Missouri's just not going to have any schools? It was mentioned last night that more than half of the money that the state of Missouri spends comes from the federal government. Well, where's that money going to come from if we cut out the federal programs? I mean, I'm going to tell you right now that if Missouri should pass the Second Amendment Preservation Act, that if Missouri should pass some sort of law that says that unions don't have the power to force themselves into an employer's business, if Missouri should pass a law that nullifies Obamacare, I will guarantee you that federal money is going to stop flowing into the state of Missouri. Where is that money going to come from? Well, it's going to come from higher taxes to the state of Missouri. And it's going to come from higher taxes from the to the state of Missouri long before the amount of income tax that we send to the federal government is decreased to a livable standard. I'm being told that we're having significant technical difficulties and that listeners are unable to hear us. We're going to log off here and then come back. It'll be about 7 minutes probably till we get all the way back. Stand by, please, and catch the rest of this show. It's going to be very exciting. Mike Moon is coming along, and I want to make sure that we are in tip-top condition before he gets here. Okay, we're back. I'm sorry about that. That was totally unprofessional, and we don't like it when things like that happen. They do just every eon or so. But I wanted to make sure we were totally and completely tuned up before Mike came along. And we are. So, anyway, the cost of state sovereignty is something that I don't think people have thought totally about. It's not going to, in the end, in the long run, when things even out, it's not going to cost you any more than it costs right now. It probably will cost significantly less, but there's going to be a transition period from federal to state sovereignty where it's going to cost a lot more, and that's probably the generation that you are sitting in and the generation probably that your children sit in, because at the same time that the state is assuming all these costs, this massive federal debt is going to have to be paid back. We will stop it from getting any bigger, but it's still going to have to be paid back. And then there are people clamoring for state sovereignty who continue to imagine that sovereignty does not equate to power. Sovereignty is power. The state will then have all of the power that the federal government has, and even more, because the state, outside of its own constitution, is not restricted by the federal constitution. So a state can, in fact, if it's not a violation of its own state constitution, regulate firearms. A state can, in fact, if it's not a violation of its own state constitution, regulate marriage. The state constitution then becomes the driver of how sovereign the people of that state are individually. Now, that's a good thing, because that power has got to reside somewhere. Someone has to have the power to say, you can only drive so fast on Interstate 44, Interstate 70. Someone has got to have the power, as we said last week, to say, you can't sit around naked in your front yard. Someone has got to have the power to say, you know, there are certain things you can and can't do, even in the confines of your own property. You can't build a nuclear weapon. You can't dump toxic waste in the creek that runs through your farm. You can't, you know, farm chickens and have runoff that goes into the neighbor's cornfield. You have to control the waste of your own property. You have to dispose of your trash properly. Someone has to be able to say those things, and that's going to be your state. And the beauty of that is, again, that you, the people, control your state. You don't control the federal government. If you would understand that state sovereignty means the 50 states control the federal government, then you would be on the right track. So make sure you understand that as we go into this thing. I want to talk for a moment about how we control the state government then. And we've touched on this a couple of episodes ago, and I want to keep trying to drive this point home, because we get so wrapped up in the glamour of Roy Blunt and Claire McCaskill and Barack Obama versus Mitt Romney and all of the press and media that surrounds that. And we forget that a member of the State House of Representatives, like Mike, who's coming along here in a little bit, is someone who is completely controllable by the people, who answers directly to the people. You know, if you don't know your state representative, then you are way outside of where you should be as a political activist. If you don't know, if you don't even know the name of your state representative, you are a couch potato politically. If you don't know your state representative, if you see him in public or her, then you are way outside the realm of where you need to be. Your state representative represents an area of about 100 city blocks by 100 city blocks. Now, if you don't know that representative, almost where to the point where he or she would know you if they saw you in the Hy-Vee supermarket, then you probably need to get in tune with what's going on in your state. That's the kind of control that people do have and should exercise. You do have that control, whether you exercise it or not. But that's the kind of control you should have on a member of the Missouri State House of Representatives. You can, with three or four other people, change your representative in Jefferson City. I mean, we are talking about a very small area where you could hit, between now and the November election, every door in that area three, four, or five times with a handful of people. I mean, if you need a change in Jefferson City, you can do that. Not so much with Roy Blunt or Claire McCaskill. If you like what you have in Jefferson City, then you be talking to that person and finding out how to hold on. Because you can do that. It's a very small area with very few people. Now, if you live in a city the size of Springfield or even Columbia or St. Louis or Kansas City for sure, you know, you can do that on foot on three Saturday afternoons. You can hit everybody in that area once. Now, political scientists tell us that to get elected as a non-incumbent, as someone that no one's heard of, you need to make physical contact with people at least three times before the election, and five is better. Well, you can do that easy with a state representative. I mean, my state representative, when the first time he ran, he knocked on my door. He stood on my front porch and talked to me for 15 or 20, maybe 25 minutes. We discussed things. He comes to local meetings. He sees people. He attends functions. So this is the area where the people actually get to control things. Now, if you can imagine that you can control things in Jefferson City, and we can reach a point where Jefferson City controls things, controls at least the two people that Missouri sends to Washington, D.C., we can see how the thing is supposed to work geometrically. And that is the beauty of state sovereignty. But you've got to, I mean, you've got to understand how that puzzle fits together. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit more about how this can be done.
For 7 years I dwelt in the loose palace of exile, playing strange games with the girls of the island. Now I have come again to the land of the fair and the strong and the wise. Brothers and sisters of the pale forest, children of night, who among you will run with the hunt? Now night arrives with her purple legion. Retire now to your tents and to your dreams. Tomorrow we enter the town of my birth. I want to be ready.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
You wrote the book with a movie in mind.
Can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
They certainly do. So I want to take care of some admin things real quick before I expect Mike in here in about 10 or 15 minutes. So I want to take care of the admin stuff before he gets here so that we can just spend the rest of the time with him. And excuse me for drooling on tonight. I've still got a bit of a sore throat from a cold, and I expected Kevin to come along and kind of relieve me once in a while. I guess he's caught up in something, and so I'm just here winging it. But I want to get back to that Secret Santa thing that we talked about in the last break. Missouri Grassroots Coalition has only one thing that we raise money for, just one. And that is the Secret Santa. We do it every year. This is the third year now that we've done Secret Santa, and the third year that Missouri Grassroots Coalition has been such a coalition. We had a bad year, but that's okay. Everyone had a bad year. It was just a bad year all around. The Salvation Army had a bad year. Toys for Tots had a bad year. I mean, everyone had a bad year. But this is why... This is why we spread this thing out. This is why we start in January trying to raise a couple of dollars for next December, is so that we don't have to come to you at the last minute in October, November, and December when everyone else is needing your help and ask for your help. We ask that through the year you consider sending in $2 or $10 or $50 or $100 as you can. It's tax time now, so it's a bad time for a lot of people. But tax time will be over soon, and then we'll get into the lazy days of spring, and then we'll get into the hot days of summer. And somewhere in there, you're going to be able to find a couple of extra bucks you can send into the Secret Santa. You do that by going to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, clicking on the Secret Santa button in the tab in the top menu, and then just use PayPal. It's that simple. Just use PayPal to send us whatever you can. Every dime goes to Secret Santa. Every dime. There's no overhead. And then the other thing that I need to talk about during the admin period is what else goes on at Missouri Grassroots Radio. Besides listening to me droll on and on, and have some very interesting guests from time to time. On Tuesdays, Cynthia Davis has a very entertaining show, a very relevant show, a very important show called Homefront. Cynthia talks a lot about the assault on the family that's going on with the progressive and socialist agenda. Then on Wednesdays, Lisa Payne Nager comes along, and she talks about, in her Culture Vigilante show, about the culture of conservatism. She has a very interesting session with, Tom Martz called Yankee Doodle Legislation that goes on all through the tenure of the Missouri legislature. It's an exciting show. So that's Tuesday at 7 and Wednesday at 7 for Cynthia and Lisa. And then, of course, next Friday and Saturday, we'll be back to talk more about state sovereignty. I'm going to have, beginning as early as next week, at least a half hour of one of the two nights dedicated to having one of our state legislators come and talk to us on a recurring basis, week after week, about what's going on in Jefferson City that week. I've held out the invitation to my state legislator because I like him. I think he's a good, solid constitutional legislator. I would like it if he would come along. If he turns me down or can't make it, I'll move on. But it will be someone who's in our camp. It will be someone who is a person in favor of state sovereignty and a strong state government, and at the same time understands and appreciates individual liberty and individual rights. See, that's what you need to do. You need to make sure that the people that you control, that is your representatives in Jefferson City, have a clear understanding and appreciation of individual liberty and individual rights, because the state is where we want to bestow the power to install any restrictions on those rights. There have to be restrictions on personal liberties. There have to be restrictions on personal rights. There have to be. I mean, you just can't let everyone do whatever. You can't make everyone have their own law. You know, there has to be a law. And we want it to be at the state level. We want it to be at the lowest level possible. We want it to be at a level where we control it. And so what we do then is we install people in Jefferson City who have an appreciation for individual liberty and individual rights, and then we count on those people to make the least restrictive law possible. That really is what state sovereignty is all about. And so I'm going to have this as an addition to the state sovereignty series, and whatever series follows the state sovereignty series, as long as the legislature is in session, to have a legislator that we can all become familiar with come along and join us for 20 minutes to a half hour every Friday or Saturday. It'll be a scheduled thing. You'll always know when it's going to be, but I'm going to let the person who's going to join us kind of decide what's best for them. And you can join at 347-677-1835 in that discussion. So that's something that we have coming up over the horizon. The other thing that I take care of in the admin period is an invitation for everyone that's listening to join Missouri Grassroots Coalition. I know that the advertisement for this, the fact that this show's on tonight, goes out to several different groups. So we may have some people listening tonight who aren't part of the Missouri Grassroots Coalition. If you aren't, you need to become so. You can join at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. You can join in the discussion at the Facebook page, Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Go to the group where you can join in the discussion. You could also look at the page from time to time and see what the news is for Missouri Grassroots Coalition. I think that what we need to continue to concentrate ourselves on is working on our state legislature to get this Article 5 thing moving. And we gave you a assignment last night that needs to be carried out here in the next week or 10 days. Lloyd is going up to Jefferson City in the upcoming week, and he's going to excuse me, I've told you I'm just getting over this thing. He's going to be talking with all the state legislators. He's going to go office to office to office and group to group to group and meeting to meeting to meeting, and he's going to be pushing the state repeal amendment. So what we need you to do is we need you to go to senate.mo.gov and house.mo.gov. That's two separate websites, one for the Senate and one for the House. Senate.mo.gov and house.mo.gov. Find your state representative, find your state senator in the list there. There's an email address for them. Drop them an email. And there's a phone number for them. Make a phone call and encourage them to get on board with the state repeal amendment. Now, the plan, of course, is to get the states, Missouri first, and then a combination of states to appeal to the United States legislature to pass out this amendment to the states for ratification. If 26 states make the appeal and it doesn't get done, then we're going to call for a convention of the states for the purpose of implementing the state repeal amendment. Now, aside from that, we're going to be making a separate call for a convention of the states because these other amendments that I've talked about, they need to be taken care of as well. And then there are some other amendments that I'm sure will come out of it. Balanced budget amendment gets talked about a lot. Term limits get talked about a lot. Oh, man, excuse me, please. And these are things that need to be done. But for the first item on your agenda, we need those letters to go out this week on this state repeal amendment. I'm going to go ahead, because I've got this coughing spell here that I can't get rid of, and we're going to go ahead and, I'm sorry, take our last break. and hopefully Mike will come along and relieve me here pretty soon. I'll be right back.
They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
I don't see any method at all.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
So dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have, because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families, and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the household, then we start making better investments.
The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Okay, the emergency destruct system is now activated. I think that plays well with the Melissa Perry quote about how your kids belong to the state, or your kids belong to us, which in Melissa Perry's little world is in fact the state. So we go on and on here about this state sovereignty thing, with the understanding that, you know, I sit around and I listen to the talk radio hosts talk about Colorado and their marijuana as though it were an evil thing. And Colorado and their marijuana may well be an evil thing, but if you understand state sovereignty, you better understand that that's up to the people of Colorado. And while it might not make you happy that Colorado has in fact legalized marijuana, or that Utah has in fact legalized gay marriage, you should embrace the fact that a state finally is accepting the responsibility of seizing from the federal government the power to make those kinds of decisions. Hey, it's Dave. How you doing?
Hey, Dave. This is Mike Moon. I'm doing real well.
I'm glad you're here, Mike. What's going on?
Well, goodness, lots of things. We just started the legislative session this past Wednesday, had one day of actual work. Off on Wednesday, we'll be off on Monday, and then back to work on Tuesday.
Okay.
To, I think, complete things until probably the Easter break.
You got your feet on the ground up there this time, though, and you're a little bit more prepared for the start than you were in the middle of the term last time, huh?
Oh my goodness! Last time I was seated on April 22nd, and with about 15 minutes of being sworn in, the voting started. And you know, I really thought I had prepared pretty well, and the first couple days were okay because the things I've been reading, you know, I was familiar with some of the bills that were being voted on, but by Wednesday, I was underwater. I felt like I jumped into the ocean and was trying to get to the surface. And so
now you,
the next, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, please.
So that weekend, we had, my kids had a track meet up near the Kansas City area, so I took all my materials and I read just about the entire track meet. I don't think I saw them compete, maybe in one event, but I thought I'd prepared well enough for the second week, so I got in on Monday. Monday and Tuesday went pretty well. By Wednesday, again, I had jumped back in the ocean. And so I thought, man, this is tougher than I thought. And the third week, though, they started bringing back things that we had worked on the first 2 weeks. There were a few bills that I really wasn't totally familiar with after that, but most of them had been rehashed already, or hashed once, and we were rehashing them again. And so I'm hopeful that this time I'll be able to stay on top of it, to know the bills as they come around, and to know whether they're constitutional, whether it's the state's responsibility to do what they're doing, or whether the people should be able to take care of it outside the state authority. So right now, I think you're right. Maybe my feet are on the ground a little bit more firmly, and I hope it stays that way.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's nobody, and I'm not a constituent, I'm sorry to say that. Well, I'm not really sorry to say it, because Eric Burleson is my guy up there, and I'm perfectly satisfied with that.
He's a great guy.
But I was nobody in the state of Missouri was happier than me to see you heading up that way. You and I met a couple of times now, and we've talked here on the radio a couple of times now, and I hear you on Matt Kenobi on Saturday morning and Nick Reed once in a while. So, I mean, I'm very familiar with your work, and what I would love to do is have you back once in a while, especially you're going to go again in November, right?
You mean to run again, you mean?
Yeah,
I'm planning on it. Filing starts February 25th.
Right.
And, you know, there's been some rumors that I'm going to be primaried. If that happens, then, you know, if the Lord wills that, then we'll just work through it as we need to. And if not, that'd be even better. But,
What's your feeling in the constituency there? You feel pretty well liked?
I think for the majority, I'm still politically an unknown. And I've been in Lawrence County now about 14 years, and you know, I guess there's sort of a disadvantage because I lived in Springfield 22 years before that, worked in Springfield for 27 years, and I've made some friends over the last 4 years in Lawrence County, probably more so than I had the 10 years prior. So I'm still kind of getting a footing in the county. But I believe that I've made enough friends and met the right people that I believe I'll be okay. But again, you know, if it's not, my belief is that the Lord orchestrated this in the first place. And if He wants me back and the people want me back, then I'll go back. If not, then I'll look for work.
Good. Well. I hope so. I think we are slowly but surely making a turn in this country, and I'm hoping that more people like you and Eric and Ted Cruz and some people like that can actually gain a foothold, and that we can slowly make advances. But what we want to talk about tonight, Mike, is this convention of the states. You're really into that, and I've been telling people that you represented us up at Mount Vernon. How much can you tell us about what went on up there?
Well, we met on December 7th in Mount Vernon on the homestead of George Washington, and there were about 100 legislators, senators, and representatives representing about 32 states.
Wow.
Some say there were a few more, but at least 32, and I thought that was great. The only reason we had a limitation on about 100, I think they said they could get 101 people in there, but it wasn't because they were going to close the meeting or anything. It was just because the room that we were meeting in wouldn't hold any more people. And so I thought it was a good showing. And the purpose of the meeting was just to kind of start the ground rules on what a convention would look like and setting the tone of it. Now, we have no authority at all, no legislative authority, to write or adopt any rules or regulations for a convention at this time. But it was just to get those folks who had an interest in it, even some, there were some curiosity speakers there as well, just to get an idea of what the feel was and whether or not this could be pulled off. I think it can. One of the interesting things that was mentioned, particular meeting, was that typically the states don't work well together. And that was in large part why the Constitution was written, because I was doing some reading on the Articles of Confederation. People continually say to me that the Constitution was done illegally, adopted illegally, and they say that when the conventioners went back to the Annapolis Convention, 1787, I believe, was the year, could have been 1786, perhaps, they were there trying to shore up and make better the Articles of Confederation, because there were some things there that admittedly were not good. The states didn't work well together. I think every state printed their own money, and they didn't trade well together. They didn't give the Congress the ability to tax. Now, that was probably a good thing, because now Congress is taxing us to death. But government is needed. I think you'll agree that we do need some government. We just don't need as much government as we have today. And so when they got together, there were several things that were going on. Let me just make a few points here. When the Congress was sitting in New York, and there was another body in Philadelphia, and they were preparing, this was trying to prepare a new constitution for the United States, where 55 statesmen that were elected by each state legislature, the 13 states at that time, and that was what ended up being the Constitutional Convention. And when they convened, I believe it was, let me see if I can get my notes here correct, Thomas Jefferson. Let's see. David, I'm sorry, I messed my notes up here just a little bit.
Oh, it's all right, Mike.
And I wanted to give you some background on this, because I think it was extremely interesting where the foreign powers especially had no confidence in our government here. For example, in defiance of the Treaty of Paris, England still held fur trading posts in the northwest of the then United States. King George III had John Adams come over as the first minister to England in 1785, but when Adams suggested a commercial treaty, the response was, what are we going to do, make treaties with 13 different states?
Right.
Because they were set up as 13 individual countries, in essence, and they weren't working well together. The French minister told Thomas Jefferson when he was in Paris that it was impossible to recognize the Congress as the government because there was no unity among the states. The Spanish governor at New Orleans offered the Western frontiersmen the use of the Mississippi if they would renounce their allegiance to the U.S. and come under the flag of Spain. So you can see that there was disunity, and there needed to be something to bring this together. And that's why I believe ultimately the Constitution of the United States was adopted and ultimately ratified. And so this comment, I don't think it got to that point, said that and this was made at the convention of the Mount Vernon Assembly, that states don't work well together. And I got the sense that even today, the states want to be number one. Missouri, the show me state, let's take the lead on this, and all the others can follow behind. And you've probably got California, New York, Louisiana, Mississippi, all wanting the same thing. And I kind of understand that. So there's going to have to be some leadership in this whole thing, and it's started already. Indiana has taken a lead, and Florida and South Carolina, but they're not. It doesn't seem like to me anyway that they have a chip on their shoulder. It looks like that they're trying to get all the ideas out on the table so that we can put together some rules that when the convention is announced by the U.S. Congress, when enough applications are received, that we'll have something in place. We'll go to the table, have a set of rules that can be adopted immediately without any delay. And they're even looking at things, David, like if a delegate or a commissioner, as they've been called in the convention, tries to exercise authority that is outside the scope and the limitations that will be placed on it and the authority given by their legislature, that they will be subject to fine or imprisonment.
Good.
And I think that puts a lot of teeth into it and should allay some of the fears from people who are saying that it will be a runaway convention. Because, of course, there is a chance that could happen, but I believe that exercising good judgment and sending people who are trusted within the state, that I think it can be a successful amendment convention of states that can start to rein in the limits and authority of the federal government. And so I came away from that meeting really excited that this could be a historic opportunity, and also thinking that with Article 5, and if I can step back just a second and give a little bit of history with regard to the Constitution, Article 5 provides two different methods for amending the Constitution. One is, of course, with the sitting Congress, and they've done that for Amendments 11 through 27. And so they are, in essence, a perpetual convention. Anytime they want, if an amendment is proposed, they can propose it, pass it to the House and the Senate, send it back to the states for ratification. The second way that you can amend the Constitution is by way of states bringing together a convention together. If 34 states will make application to the U.S. Congress for the same subject, then Congress has no alternative but to authorize the convening of that amendment process. And then, of course, any amendments that are proposed, they would have to be ratified by the 38 states as well. So if you look at it that way, some people say, well, there could be a rogue amendment proposed, and that certainly could happen. I don't think it will, but it's a possibility. It would take only 13 states to quash it. And
exactly.
I think that with at least 27 or so relatively conservative state legislatures, then I think that would be the thing that should ease people's minds, that we're not going to rewrite the Constitution, and we're not going to give Congress more authority than they already have today. On the other hand, we are going to reinforce the 10th Amendment. We hope to do things like exercising authority over the executive orders and also the administrative rules and regulations that have been written. You know, each one of those carry the full force and effect of a law. And if you look at the Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution, it says all legislative power herein granted shall be vested in the Congress of the United States, which will be comprised of a House of Representatives and a Senate. And that's simple enough for most people to understand that only Congress can make laws. Yet we have the president, goodness, almost every day he's writing an executive order, or he's, even with Obamacare, which 70% or more of the country didn't want anyway, and he's changing the law without anybody's approval to say, well, let's not enact this today because it's not working. We'll give it some time until things can be up and running and maybe it'll work. And also, these agency regulations, if you violate one of those, you can be imprisoned or pay a substantial fine. And I talked to congressional representatives who say that, yes, you know, historically, presidents have been able to write executive orders. They've also allowed the agencies to, in effect, write law, but yet they're not ratified by Congress. And that tells me, when I get that answer, that someone doesn't have the backbone, perhaps, to speak up and say, we've got to stop this. And so if the Congress won't stand up and exercise what the Constitution mandates, and they're not going to relinquish any of their power, the states are going to have to stand up and take it from them. And it was written in the Constitution for a purpose, and I'm surprised that it hadn't been used yet. And can you imagine that our forefathers, some years down the road, if we had a meeting together and our country has gone down the tubes because of a runaway government, and they would say, well, why did you not exercise Article 5? I mean, we'd be embarrassed. It's like, you know, that V8 commercial. You knock yourself on the head and said, oh, we could have done our Article 5. So,
yep.
You know, I'm really excited about this. I think there's a lot of potential for success. And there are some naysayers, but I believe that we can overcome that with constitutionally minded individuals who believe in the Constitution and think it will, or have confidence it will work. And I'm one of them, and I'm finding others who are coming on board all the time. And so I'm really excited about the potential of it.
So that's great. I'm so glad to have you here tonight, Mike. We've been talking about this and talking about this for some time now. I started a series 3 or 4 months ago about Article 5, and we started talking about it, and then we've recently switched that over to a series on state sovereignty, which we're in the middle of now, which goes right along with Article 5. I wanted to get you on here to find out how that thing went in Mount Vernon and what's going to happen next.
Well, the next step in the whole process is for at least 34 state legislatures to make application to the U.S. Congress. And I mentioned 3 states, Indiana, South Carolina, and Florida, have all pre-filed legislation. It's called an application, and it's one that both houses, if they're a bicameral legislature, have to pass out. And then
right.
Once that's done, it goes to the Congress. It's not something that requires a governor's signature, so that's fortunate
right.
that we don't have to worry about a veto. But 3 states have pre-filed. I've sent some language through our research department. I've received that, and then I forwarded it to a man named Mike Ferris and some of his staff, Robert Kelly, who will look it over with a fine-tooth comb and make sure that the language is where we want it. And that's important because the courts could challenge applications if they're not of the same subject. And so we want
right.
them to be identical, if at all possible. And so that's where we are now. In addition to that, and in tandem with it, we are talking to other legislators, helping them to understand it, first of all, encouraging them to support it. And once we get a good number of co-sponsors, and we will go ahead and file the legislation and then encourage the speaker to assign it to a committee, come back out, and then we can vote on it and get it sent away. And these applications, once they're sent in or submitted to the Congress, they are permanent until rescinded. And so that's kind of a nice thing. So if we do ours this year and we don't have all 34 in 1 year, that's of no consequence. It could be a year or two or several. We're hoping that by 2015, though, that we'll have 34 submitted and the conference convention can be convened and it will be underway.
Now, are you, and this is something that I've been saying to folks, are you also of the opinion, as I am, that we don't just go to this meeting like it's a tea party and then just start throwing things out on the table for grabs? We actually go here with some specific amendments in mind that we're all pretty much together on, that we all pretty much know what we want to get out of it?
Yes, sir. And that's a great point and a good segue to mention the conventionofstates.com. This is a project of the Citizens for Self-Governance. Mark Meckler is the founder of this. He, you might remember, was the co-founder of the Tea Party Patriots.
Yep.
Quite a while ago, and now he's with the Citizens for Self-Governance. And along with him, working alongside, is a man named Mike Ferris. He is a constitutional attorney out of Purcellville, Virginia. He is the chancellor of Patrick Henry College, and he has jumped in the whole body head first into to this and really doing a bang-up job in helping us get the information out. There's an interesting story about Mike Ferris with regard to what happened when Mark Levin, for example, was publishing his Liberty Amendments book. 2 weeks prior to the publishing of the book, the Convention of States website went live. And then when the book was published, Mike Ferris told me that he said, I saw the book and thought, well, good grief, he's doing the same thing we're doing. We're very similar, and had never met Mark Levin, but realized they only lived 8 miles from each other. and so now they're working kind of in parallel. And of course, Mark Levin has come on board supporting it, and Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, and I believe Rush Limbaugh has as well. But that's great momentum builders for us, and we're just hopeful that it'll continue. And I've had calls from across Missouri acknowledging that I went to the Mount Vernon Assembly and asking how they can help. And so if folks want to get involved, I would first suggest that you go to the conventionofstates.com, excuse me, and sign up for being a volunteer and also to receive the updates, and that's right on the website front page. You can do that. And you can then encourage your friends and your family to look up the information. And there are many articles and some tutorials that you can look at there to become more familiar with it if you're not totally understanding. And I will tell you, I have to be honest, about 6 months or so ago, I was in the same category as many others who thought that this might be a constitutional convention that would be on a runaway course. But I really didn't understand what Article 5 was about. And when I reread it and began looking at other information about what the potential would be, I realized that, first, there's no authority for a constitutional convention to rewrite it. Only to amend it. And that comforted me and gave me the information that I was looking for. And as I talked to Mike Ferris and others about this, I realized that this could be our last best hope. You know, I talk with a lot of people who are talking nullification and secession. And when I think of secession, I get visions of blood.
Yeah,
that's what happens in our Civil War. And
yeah,
I don't think anyone really wants to go there. Although we talk big sometimes. It's like when we say, you know, the government can have my guns when they pry them out of my cold dead hand. You know, that's great to say, but I would imagine most others, and probably me included, would say, you know what, I really like living. And,
Not only that, but exactly. I don't want to see my kids and grandkids strewn out all over the front yard. Yeah, that's
right.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I think that we would probably be best served by at least trying this. Now, we may not be successful. I have to admit that. However, if we don't try it, or we'll be kicking ourselves in the rear end for a long time to come. And I don't think that that's what we're called to do. I think as long as we have breath within us, we need to do all we possibly can to make a better world for our kids and our grandchildren. And I'm not just saying that it's cliche. I have five children myself, and I often wonder, that's why I got involved in politics in the first place, because I just didn't know what kind of world they were going to grow up in. And I have a faith in Jesus Christ, which I know that this is not our permanent home, but I still believe that we ought to do what we can to make it a better place. And, you know, we have elected people for goodness, how many years, I couldn't tell you, that have taken the authority that we've loaned them and run rampant with it. And there's very little that it seems that we can do to hold them accountable. They come home, they speak the right things to enough people that give them the impression that, yeah, they're trying. But then when you look at what they're doing, it's just not what we ask them to do. And so this is one thing you mentioned about what we want to get done in this convention. One of them is to take a look at limiting terms on Congress and even the Supreme Court. And I think that, you know, I was against term limits at one time because I think that I still believe the Constitution can be an effective term limiter. However, we don't have enough people engaged in the process to go out and vote intelligently.
That's true.
Unless and until that happens, we've got to change it. And I think that's one thing. Some of the others, if you're ready for that, what we hope that could get passed is a balanced budget amendment. Missouri offered and passed an application for a convention on a specific amendment, which would be a balanced budget back in 1983. I've been told there have been about 30 or so states that have come on board and done the same thing, but not enough. So you got to have 34 before Congress will actually allow a convention to be convened. And that brings up another point. In past history, one of the reasons I believe, and I think it can be proven historically, that an Article 5 convention of states has not been held is because when enough interest from the states has been shown, Congress says, well, I guess we better act. And so they do it. One of them was with the 17th Amendment, which was a bad one. But if we put enough pressure on the Congress and they realize that if they don't get it done, then we're going to do it, then maybe that would light a fire under their feet. I'm hopeful, though, that we'll be able to actually get a convention called and put some of these things on the table and get them ratified. Another one is... Yes.
No, I I want her to go on, but I want to say I join you in that. I've said on several of these shows that we can expect that once this thing gets rolling, that once the Congress sees 25 or 26 or 27 of these applications hit, that they will start doing some things. And I say we keep the process moving, because what they will do is just enough to appease people. I mean, absolutely no more than they have to do to put out the fire.
I believe you're right. And I think that's extremely important, because it's kind of funny. I think that lines up with other things that we as a people have done. We think we find the perfect candidate, for example, and we have them elected. And then we go back to our lives and forget what we've done, and then they go off on a tangent and do the exact opposite of what they were called to do.
That's right.
And so I think you're right. We have to keep this going. And I believe that states realize that it can be done, that we will get some momentum and continue the process. Another one of the amendments that we're looking for is a redefinition of the Commerce Clause. I think you'll agree, and most people would, I hope, that Commerce Clause was primarily for regulating commerce between the states, from state to state, not within the state. Yet the Congress now is regulating everything intrastate as well, and I think that stifles business, and they're usurping authority they don't have. Also, prohibiting international treaties and international laws to govern domestic laws in the United States. We're seeing an increase in Sharia law application in some of the courts, and we've got to stop that. I mean, that is dangerous. And,
right.
And not just that, but even UN treaties that have been adopted by president that haven't been ratified by the Senate. If they're ratified, of course, then they become the law of the land. But until then, we should not be following their dictate. And,
that's right.
And then I mentioned the executive orders and federal regulations. Those need to be limited. I personally believe that each and every one of those need to be gone over with a fine-tooth comb, and unless and until they're ratified by the Congress, they're null and void. I mean, even day one. And that will change a lot. I mean, they have regulated businesses to death, and the executive orders, I forget the number, I think it's 13663 or something in that range, where it gives the president the ability to call martial law or enforce martial law. And I think that's an extremely dangerous, especially considering the president we have in office today.
Absolutely.
Also mentioned imposing term limits on Congress and even the Supreme Court. Mike Ferris has a unique stance and take on Supreme Court limitations, and I wish I could verbalize it as well as he does, but he thinks that with increasing the numbers of Supreme Court justices and allowing them to be recalled, which, you know, right now is nearly impossible to do it. I don't think you can recall one.
You can.
And we would be able to kind of hold them to what they're supposed to be doing as well. Placing an upper limit on federal taxation, and that goes hand in hand with the balanced budget. Whether that's tied to the GDP or the percentage or not, I don't really have the answer there, but I think if a balanced budget is passed, we can't just allow the Congress to simply raise taxes to afford whatever shortfalls they might have. And without some limits on taxation and spending, that would be incomplete. And then a unique thing, and whether we can get all these done or not, I don't know, but requiring a sunset on all existing federal taxes, how about that? And requiring a supermajority to replace them with new and fairer taxes. And, you know, these are just a handful of things, but I believe if we could get just one or two of them in the hopper and get them going, I believe that in a short time the people could see what a difference it's making. And then perhaps we could get another and then another and another. And slowly set this ship back on the right course. I believe that it can be done, and I'm hopeful that, again, we can encourage others to at least take a look at it with an open mind and realize that if they're talking runaway convention, we already have one in place. Our Congress is a standing convention, and they're doing whatever they want with total disregard for the people, and that's got to change. If it doesn't, we're doomed. And
we are.
Do it sooner than later.
You know, that's been my mantra all along, and I've been on this. I quite frankly, I've been on the Article 5 thing for almost 5 years now, and I'm glad to see Mark Levin finally get on the bandwagon with it. But I've been talking about it. I've been preaching about it. I started a group over at Matt Matt Kibbe's place called Article 5 Now, and I could not get anyone interested over there. And nobody wanted to talk about it. But now it's really – I'm really excited. I'm as excited as you are, and I didn't even get to go to the meeting. I've read most of Ferris's stuff, and for the listeners, I got a voicemail. I haven't gotten back to her yet from Cynthia, who does our shows here on Tuesday nights, that she is going to be having Mike on her show as a guest in the near future.
Good.
Yeah.
Very good.
So, but yeah, I'm with you. You know, I'll tell you what, and I think a balanced budget amendment is good. I think term limits are good. I think term limits on Supreme Court justices are good. And in the last 5 weeks, we've done shows dedicated to each of those topics. But I'm of the opinion, Mike, that if we can repeal 17. And put you guys in Jefferson City back in charge of who represents us in the Senate. If we can put someone back in the Senate who represents the interests of the state of Missouri, then we go a long way. We go a long way. If we can, and then my next favorite, and I didn't even hear well, and I know this didn't come out of Levin's book, but. But my next favorite is repeal 16, in that same amendment, go to a consumption tax, to a fair tax, and then the state repeal amendment that we talked with Lloyd Sloan about last night, where, and I know this was Levin had one kind of like this in his book, but it wasn't nearly as concise as the one that Lloyd Sloan proposes, and that is where half the states, 26 states, that represent half the population could repeal, just by a vote of the 26 state legislatures, any federal law or regulation. Just make it go away. If we could do those three things, in my mind, the others would just be icing on the cake. I mean, if we can get back with those three things, repeal the 17th, that goes a long way toward reestablishing the states where they belong and putting the federal government back in its box. Because, like I say, and this is what I talk about when I talk to the listeners about what can you do to control the state government. When we talk about state sovereignty, we need to talk hand in hand about how do we control our own state government then. And I talk about that body you sit in, the House of Representatives. I say, you know, you're talking about in a city, a 100 by 100 square block area. You and six people can have an impact on who that person is. So that's only one, you know, we hear Boehner talk all the time, we're only one third of one half of the, you know, but the fact of the matter is, Mike, one house, while it can't pass good law, can certainly stop bad law all by itself.
You know, David, I was just thinking of something, and I haven't research this at all, but the thought just came to mind. You know, we're talking about the 17th Amendment. I agree, just as you do, that the states have lost their voice in Washington, D.C. because they're not able to control or at least have influence on the representative, the senator.
Right.
So I wonder if even now, even though the senator is elected by popular vote, if the state legislatures could recall a U.S. senator if they weren't acting on behalf of the state.
There are 12 states that have such a stipulation currently in their state constitutions. We do not.
And it's a recall provision?
Right.
Is that
there are 12
is?
States.
Okay.
There are 12 states that have a recall provision for federal legislatures, and I did a show on that, and I have those 12 states in a list somewhere here in a drawer. But then there is also the problem of it's never been done, it's never been tried, and the United States Congress, the United States Senate specifically, has made it clear that they will challenge in court any state that ever tries it. Exactly.
You know, I just wonder, in a situation like that, of course, I go back to the statement again that the current Congress, which is the House and the Senate, will not willingly give up any of their power or authority to the state.
Oh, no.
In a situation like this, if we had a state senator that we decided as a legislature, at the will of the people, recall him or her, and we were challenged by the U.S. authorities, then what would happen if we just, I think that would gain a lot of interest in the state, and people would, I think, sit up and listen, at least I hope they would. The next election would take care of itself, I would hope.
Yeah.
So
even
if they said, we're going to renege them, we're not going to send them back home, okay, well, no. But they're out. You just give us whatever amount of time they have left in their term, and they'll never work again as a in a elected office.
Yeah, that's right. The thing that, you know, I still think, though, that we've got to do something to get, and I like repeal the 17th. We need to do something to get the specific interests of the state of Missouri back in Washington, D.C. And, you know, we need the Roy Blunts and the Claire McCaskills of Washington, D.C. to be working for the state of Missouri, for the state legislature. And if we wanted to put in that amendment that repeals 17, that they work at the will of the state legislature, so the state legislature could call them home any time and replace them, that's fine.
Yeah.
And I don't even have a problem with the state pays those two people.
Uh-huh.
I don't. You know, that's perfectly fine with me too.
It makes sense. Sure, it makes sense.
And you know, I quite frankly, Mike, if it weren't for the 17th Amendment, I don't think we'd have Obamacare. If those hundred senators worked for the interest of the state that they represent, I don't think we'd have Obamacare today. There's no 26 states that wanted this thing.
Right. 70%, I believe, is the number still that, of at least the population that didn't want it.
Yeah.
And it was just running down the throat.
27 is the number of states that have sued the federal government over it.
Yeah.
So there.
I believe you hit the nail on the head. That's a good point.
And I don't see, you know, and you know me, you know, I've been on the fair tax for a long time, but I have always said that we do not do the fair tax the way H.R. 25 is written. We do not do the fair tax and then count on someone to repeal the income tax. We repeal the income tax in the same step. In the same step as we institute the fair tax, we repeal the income tax. We do not risk having those two taxes alive at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, that's my three votes, quite frankly. I love the term limits for Supreme Court justices, and I'm with you. I started out until the not too long ago past, being opposed to term limits, thinking that, you know, term limits is someone telling me I can't vote for Eric Burleson in 2020. But I've come into the term limits camp now, and I'm, you know, the reelection of people like Claire McCaskill and Roy Blunt is what did it for me, quite frankly. It's just, something's got to be done. But okay, what do you think the chances are of this resolution up in Jeff City?
Well, we don't yet have a Senate or a senator to sponsor the bill in their house, and so we're still kind of in limbo there. I think we'll get one. I think the chances are good. I believe, though, that there still is much work to be done to educate, and that's why I go back to encouraging all the listeners to contact their representative and their senator. And,
right.
and first – get some education yourself. Go to the Convention of States Project which is at conventionofstates.com, and read a little bit about it, just even just to get your taste buds energized. And then once you have a little bit of information, talk to them. And you don't have to be expert on it. In fact, if you would like, ask them to contact me. They can contact me at the house at mike.moon@house.mo.gov, or I'll give you my phone number. It's 417-818-5419. That, again, is 418-5419, and I'd be happy to talk to them or any callers who have an interest. And if I can encourage you at all, I'd love to do that. But we've got to first get a grassroots rolling, and we're going pretty well in Missouri. We have some folks who have gone up to the Capitol, gone door-to-door in the House and some of the Senate, and just taking time to explain it to them and see if there's any questions they can answer and encourage them to take a look if they're still not supportive. I believe, though, that we need to get grassroots first, because if we had the House to pass it, the Senate to pass it, and then the individual citizens not know what in the world is going on, we could very well have an uprising, and we don't want that to happen. We want everybody to be on board so that Missouri can actually be the leader in this, and we can be one of the first states, or at least one of the first several states, to get it passed and be ready when that convention is called. I still think it's going to happen. Just when, I can't tell you, and you know, I just am excited that we have the opportunity to do something like this.
Well, I'm with you, Mike, you're on my short list for people to represent the state of Missouri as a delegate. Quite frankly, I know that I know you're still studying the history of the article and the history of how we got here, but my primary criteria for the delegate or delegates who represent the state of Missouri at this convention of the states is that it must be someone who holds a zealous jealousy for the sovereignty of the great state of Missouri. And I know you do. I'm proud to say that I know you. I'm proud to say that, you know, I say that day that I met you at the courthouse steps was a good day for me. And I appreciate everything that you do for us. And I really want to have you back more often and talk more and more about this and the specific amendments and how things are going how things are going in Jeff City on getting this done. You'll be meeting Lloyd Sloan this week. He's headed up to Jeff City to spend the week talking to you folks up there about the state repeal amendment.
Good.
So pick his brain a little bit about that particular thing. We spent an hour with him last night on the show. So anyway, Mike, I'm running out of time here, so I want to invite you back anytime, as an improv. If you're just sitting around some Friday or Saturday night and saying, I'm bored with TV, I think I'll call Dave and call Dave and give him my 2 cents worth, then please do it. And I'll certainly be getting in touch with you and inviting you back again, and not only to talk about this, but I want to help you politic for holding on to that job up there too. So we'll be talking to you about that. And I appreciate everything you do up there, and I know darn well your constituents do. I enjoy hearing you on Saturday mornings. I enjoy hearing you once in a while on the Nick Reed Show, and I actually say there is a guy that is what a state representative ought to be. I mean, I tell these people that I talk to every Friday and Saturday night, you know, if you wouldn't know your state representative if you met him in the Hy-Vee supermarket, then you're not where you need to be politically. This is the level where someone represents you directly. The House of Representatives in Jefferson City, and you know you are in tune with politics if your representative recognizes you when he sees you in Hy-Vee without you being a stalker or a pain in his butt. But all the same, I mean, that's the kind of relationship that we need to have with people. And I know you long for that with your constituents, and I know that they appreciate you. And I have no doubt that you'll be back up there as many times as the people of your district want you to go. Thanks for coming along, Mike. It was a great show. It was great talking to you. Keep up the good work, man. We'll be watching you.
Well, David, I'm encouraged by your enthusiasm, and thank you for your support. And I'll come back anytime you'll have me.
Thanks, Mike. Good night, my friend.
You're welcome.
That, folks, was one of the greats. That was Representative Mike Moon working hard for his constituents in Jefferson City, working hard for us here in the state of Missouri with the Conventions of the State Convention of the States Project, a guy who knows first and foremost what individual liberty is all about and how that relates to state sovereignty and how state sovereignty relates to our need to get this federal government put back in its box. Thanks for tuning in tonight. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I certainly did. If you got through my stumbling around the first hour, it was certainly worth it to get to an hour with Mike Moon. Don't forget Tuesday night, Cynthia. I'll be talking to Cynthia, and I'm sure she'll be making an announcement soon as to when this is going to happen. Don't forget she's on Tuesday night, 7 o'clock. And don't forget Wednesday night, 7 o'clock, Lisa Payne Nager with the Culture Vigilante. We'll be back on Friday and Saturday next week. I'm hoping to have an exciting guest that Kevin was trying to cook up for us. I'll have us a representative, I hope by then, to spend 20 minutes or a half hour with us on one of those two nights and keep us in tune with what's going on in Jefferson City. And I'd love it to be Mike. I hate to lean on him too much, but my first choice is my own representative, who I'm keenly aligned with politically and so we'll be working on that. Don't forget MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, Secret Santa button, PayPal, send us a couple of bucks. While you're there, just join Missouri Grassroots Coalition, Missouri Grassroots Coalition on Facebook, both a page and a group. Get involved in some of the discussion going on there, and stay tuned to Missouri Grassroots Radio. I sure appreciate the entire listening audience. I appreciate all your feedback, and we'll talk to you next Friday night. Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.